Okay, hi friends. It's been a while. It looks like it's been about 2 weeks of rather intense work on the election here since I've had a chance to get back to Letters on Occult Meditation video commentary. And we are finally beginning program number 50, program number 50. And today is the 26th, so 2 weeks and 2 days, a lot longer than I had hoped for. But now we are beginning a new section, so even if I just get a short program out to you, it is at least something. And this is letter number eight. We have about 100 pages left to go in the book. Letter eight, access to the masters via meditation. We've had all kinds of discussion on mantram and color and forms used to contact the various higher agencies. And now we seem to be settling into a section that actually will help us clarify what the masters really are. And that you would think that by now we would really know that, and maybe we will find some of this material familiar. But it has been my realization that there's not much that is really familiar in this book, Letters on Occult Meditation. It is a detailed and technical book, a detailed and technical collection of letters. So anyway, access to the masters via meditation, and then the questions that will be asked with that Master DK will attempt to answer for us. Who are the masters? What access to a master entails from the standpoint of the pupil, A, and B, from the standpoint of the master. Three, methods of approach to the master in meditation. And four, the effect of this access on the three planes. Now, let's see, there are some diagrams here, and we're familiar with them. I suppose if we were to go to the Alice Bailey books directly and let's see, 254. And yeah. And what I would do then is we have, much better maps than this. But anyway, 254, this is what is showing. And we have that all in color, of course. That's one thing. It tells us something about the masters and their relationships. And let's see. Also, I think to 55. Yes, and there are the various hierarchies. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll attempt to go here, and here are the creative hierarchies. We've been using them for sure. And let's see if there's anything else here that I think we simply need. Yeah, and that will be the one that Keith Bailey made. And the lines of color have been very useful, you know, since we're serious students. He certainly has given his permission that we can study these things, and but the colors that he's added are very helpful. And Tuya has done the same with even further refinements of certain colors in the different maps. So this is what I'm showing you. I sometimes forget to show you what I intend to show you. Okay, so these are the map little charts that precede our work in letter number 8. And we will then go to letter 8. Let's see if that takes us to where we want to go. I think so. So access to the masters via meditation. And I'm just trying to arrange all this so that it looks correct. September 12th, 1920, 100 years ago. 100 years ago and 2 months. The search for the goal. Today it may be possible to touch somewhat upon the subject of the masters and how they may be approached through meditation. This is, you know, I think many people really are interested in this, whether for selfish purposes or altruistic purposes, whether, you know, for the right motive or not. This, I know. Let me make sure I have our brackets correct. So this, I know, is a subject close to your heart, meaning, let us say, keenly desired, as it is to the heart of all those who earnestly follow the light within. I seek to handle this subject with you in such a way that at the close of this letter, the masters will be more real to you than ever before, and that is, well, much to be wished, because there's so much unreality put forth regarding these graduates of the human kingdom. So the masters will be more real to you than ever before. The significance of approach to them be better comprehended, and the method more simplified. So this is his, and the effect of contact with them will be so demonstrated in the life that its immediate and practical attainment will be earnestly pursued. So indeed, he seeks for us to pursue contact, indeed, for the right reasons, of course. Let us therefore, as we have always done, divide our subject into certain heads and divisions, and these we have looked at, read once already. Who are the masters? What does access to them entail? From the standpoint of the pupil, from the standpoint of the master, methods of approach to the master through meditation, and the effect of this access on the three planes. Everywhere, throughout the whole world, all right, we're in the right place. Everywhere throughout the whole world is felt the urge If it drives a man to seek out someone who, for him, embodies the ideal. You know, sometimes that happens, and you yourself may be the object of that quest on behalf of another, and then a test naturally occurs. Even those who do not admit the existence of the masters seek some ideal, and then visualize that ideal as embodied in some form on the physical plane. They picture themselves perhaps as the exponents of ideal action, or visualize some great philanthropist, some superlative scientist, some notable artist or musician as embodying their supreme conception. So this idealism is part of the dynamic which drives us forward into greater achievement. The human being, simply because he is himself fragmentary and incomplete, has always this urge within himself to seek others, other and greater than himself. It's a simple way of saying a deep truth. Master DK hits the nail on the head here. We ascend through our ideals, which often involves the emulation of an ideal individual or the attempt to fulfill an image of ourselves, which is more ideal than what we normally register. It is this that drives him back to the center of his being, and it is this that forces him to take the path of return to the all self. The path of return. Eventually, this will happen. And ever throughout the eons does the prodigal son arise and go to his father. And always latent within him is the memory of his father's home and the glory there to be found. I leave the father's home, and turning back, I save. He has been there, and in fact, as the brother who never left home is there. But the human mind is so constituted that the search for light and for the ideal is necessarily long and difficult. And we might say that if the human, that's the higher mind, the human mind, were differently constituted, the search might be more rapid. Here's the quote from St. Paul. Now we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face. Now we catch glimpses through the occasional windows we pass in our ascension of the ladder of other and greater beings than ourselves. And I think this is a common experience for all of us, and it gives us the incentive that we need. So we catch these glimpses. Now we catch glimpses through the occasional windows we pass in our ascension of the ladder of other and greater beings than ourselves. They hold out to us helping hands and call to us in clarion tones, if we could but recognize the tones, to struggle bravely on if we hope to stand where they are now standing. But do we hear? That's the question, because they do speak in what is called here trumpet-like clarion tones. C-L-A-R-I-O-N. To struggle bravely on if we hope to stand where they are now standing. And on it goes. Perhaps some of us hope to stand where Master DK is now standing. Perhaps he hopes to stand where Master KH is now standing. Perhaps Master KH seeks to stand where the Lord Maitreya is now standing, and who or what can be the ideal objective of the head of the hierarchy? He's on the, or will be on the ray path, and maybe we don't know what that constitutes in terms of a ray lord, one who becomes the embodiment of a certain quality of energy. We sense the beauties and glories surrounding us that as yet we cannot revel in. They flit into our vision. You know, he's kind of describing, I think, his own experience. They flit into our vision and we touch the glory at a lofty moment, only again to lose the contact and sink back again into the murky gloom that envelops. This is the up and down progress experienced on the path. And during the age of Aquarius, Aquarius represents that hill and valley experience of the mystic, and we will expect to see much of this exaltation followed by a sinking down, followed by another exaltation, and so forth. Hopefully the entire progress having a basically upward trend. But we know that outside and further on is something to be desired. He's really speaking our language, isn't he? He's speaking in a language we can all understand. We learn also the mystery that the external wonder can only be contacted by withdrawing within. The kingdom of heaven, we know the statement, is within. Till the center of consciousness is found that vibrates in tune with those dimly realized wonders, with those radiant souls who call themselves our elder brothers. Here he identifies with us very much, and though he is a master, he identifies himself as one who aspires to contact with still elder brothers. Till the center of consciousness vibrates in tune with those dimly realized wonders, and with those radiant souls who call themselves our elder brothers. And so certainly even the Tibetan has his elder brothers, just as we do. Okay. So it's a gradual, you know, relativity, moving always to higher and higher points of tension, and the masters are not excluded from that kind of progress, though their present point of tension is much higher than our own. Still, they long for still higher points of tension, which fleetingly reveal themselves, but are not yet stable even in their lives. Only by trampling on the external sheaths that veil and hide the inner center do we achieve the goal and find the ones we seek. Only by the domination of all forms and the bringing of those forms under the rule of the God within can we find the God in all. For it is only the sheaths in which we move upon the plane of being that hide from us our inner God, and thus shut us off from those in whom the God transcends all outer forms. He somehow, you know, gives us an amazing way of considering the method of achievement. And sometimes he uses very powerful, even almost violent words like trampling upon the external sheaths. That sounds like we have to have a great disregard for the value of the external sheaths relatively to the value of the inner God. And it, you know, everything in us tells us that he speaks the truth on these matters. We discount the captivating lure of the outer sheaths because they are veils upon a deeper sense of ourself and a contact with ones that already steadily exemplify a higher sense of self. Forms are useful, but they must be dominated, and by what? By the power of the inner God. So we want to find eventually the God in all, the one God. I sometimes, you know, call it infusception, by which we pursue the sense of the one God. I think this is what I needed to do. It's only by the domination of these forms that we will find this, through identification, this sameness in all, the underlying, the inner God. For it is only the sheaths in which we move upon the plane of being that hide us from our inner God, or hide from us our inner God. I mean, do we really know the inner angel of the presence? Do we really know our inner monad, of which the apparent we is the extension? So we're shut off from a sense of our higher self, and we are shut off as well from the great beings who live steadily, stably at a higher point of tension. The great initiate who voiced the words, I quote, added still other words of radiant truth, then we shall know, even as we are known. This is the initiate Paul, who probably achieved his mastership somewhere before DK did. DK's mastership was achieved, we are told, by him in 1875. But the Master Hilarion, I think, was already a master before that time. And it seemed that in the same life, he achieved both the third and the fourth initiations. The future holds for each and all who duly strive, who unselfishly serve and occultly meditate, the promise of knowing those who already have full knowledge of the struggler. And that's what we are. We, representatives of the fourth kingdom of nature and of the fourth creative hierarchy, we are the struggler. Interesting to think of oneself in that way. But I dare say that if we look back upon this particular incarnation, we will find so many struggles. Simply, as one is moving closer to the fourth degree, however slowly, the fourth ray will be ever more prominent. It is the ray of struggle until harmony is achieved. And therein lies the hope for the student of meditation. But, what is here? We have to duly strive continuously, even after we've achieved some higher initiations. It's not that the third degree initiate no longer strives. It's not that the fourth degree initiate no longer strives. They do. But their striving is dealing with different objectives than our striving at a lower point of tension, and who unselfishly serve, not out of duress or out of hope for some kind of selfish achievement or out of spiritual ambition, but truly to help, who unselfishly serve and who occultly meditate according to the ancient rules that he is imparting to us as best he can, given our stage of understanding. And then we will know those who know us in a certain way. We will know even as we are known. So therein lies the hope for the student of meditation as he struggles, as he fails, as he perseveres, And as he laboriously reiterates from day to day the arduous task of concentration of and of mind control, there stand on the inner side those who know him and who watch with eager sympathy the progress that he makes. So, you know, I've sometimes thought it amazing that the Christ knows every true aspirant. Maybe every true aspirant has taken the first initiation. Somewhere it tells us that, and therefore has faced the great Lord as the first initiator. But the Christ knows every one of us if we are a true aspirant. Forget not the earlier part of the initiate's remarks, where he points out the way whereby the darkness is dispelled. The initiate, I mean, this is again, you know, St. Paul, where he points out the way whereby darkness is dispelled and knowledge of the great ones is reached. They are ever behind the scenes, and only our own veils, our preoccupation with outer things, prevents us now from detecting their presence. He emphasizes that only by love is the path of light and knowledge trodden. Why this emphasis upon love? Because the goal for all is love, at least on our planet and in our solar system with its great synthetic second ray, on the level of the soul, and maybe one day on the level of the monad, and in this solar system on the level of the personality of the solar logos. Because the goal for all is love, and therein lies the merging. So why this emphasis upon love? And you know, St. Paul may be an ultimate first ray monad now, and his sub monadic ray may be the fifth, because he is the Chohan of the fifth ray ashram. But when you kind of look into his soul nature, it looks very militant. It looks like the sixth ray, and maybe since he spoke so convincingly of the Buddhi, maybe transferring to the second ray. Finally, he is one who has taken the kingdom of heaven by storm. As first ray monads tend to do. But you have to look at the you have to look at the chart, and you have to see that the monadic ray can be any one of the seven on the monadic plane, but only one of three on the logoic plane when it becomes the liberated monad. To put scientifically what is oft a nebulous sentiment, you know, some kind of blend of emotion and mind, some kind of camomanasic apprehension, we might express it as follows. It is by the attainment of the vibration, which is analogous to the ray of love wisdom, the divine ray, not the primordial ray or the ray of the next solar system, but the synthetic ray of this solar system, the divine ray, that the lords of love are contacted, that the masters of compassion are known, and that the possibility of entering into the consciousness of the great ones and of all our brothers of whatsoever degree becomes a fact in manifestation. So this is a definite statement that we have to achieve not the exact same vibration as the solar logos, but something that is analogous to the ray of love wisdom. And then we can contact either the lords of love, of which Master Serapis and the Master Jesus are two, or the masters of the wisdom. Well, they all have compassion, of course, and they all have love. It's just a question of the degree of emphasis and the degree to which they have been involved with the monastic vibration. This is the path to be trodden by one and all, and the method is meditation. Over and over, this is emphasized, and it is a rigorous occult meditation we're talking about, not just a dreamy method, as is so often found when people begin their meditative quest. The goal is perfect love and wisdom, at least in our second major solar system, perfect love and wisdom. The steps are the surmounting of subplane after subplane on all the three planes. Maybe planes of personality, perhaps? Or are we talking about super planes of what's called superhuman evolution? Anyway, the method is that of occult meditation. The reward is the continuous expansion of consciousness that puts a man eventually en rapport with his own ego, his own angel of the presence, his own monadic extension, with other selves, with the waiting, eager master to whom he is assigned, and you might say by whom, with fellow disciples and more advanced initiates whom he may contact in that master's aura, till he finally contacts the one initiator, and that is really S.K., Sanat Kumara. Usually when it says one initiator, we think of Sanat Kumara, even though the Christ is the initiator for the initiations of the threshold which precede the third degree. Till he finally contacts the one initiator, is admitted to the secret place and knows the mystery that underlies consciousness itself. This is the mystery of being, I would hazard to say. So perfect love, perfect love. This is our goal, and there is a gradual method, a graded method, step by step, step by step. Let's see if I have let's see where we are here. The goal, I think I'll have to do it a little differently than I was going to do it. I'll do it this way, so as to point out what we have here. admitted finally to the secret place and understanding, we come to understand that there is some substratum of pure and inviolable being which underlies all consciousness. Some people think that consciousness is being itself. They act as if it is. They act as if consciousness is the one reality, but I always tend to think of it as derivative. Derivative of being, arising as a result of being, arising from being, a special case or modification of being. So a great incentive is held before us. Right now, we know, I think, many of our limitations. We know we are trapped within that which the normal perceptual apparatus reveals. And we know that that which underlies all of this normal manyness is not open to us as it would be, as it will be, when at last we achieve the kind of sensitivity which unveils this underlying reality. And we strive forward because that's our nature. You know, the spirit may descend and attempt to enfold itself, to involve itself in lesser and lesser instances of itself. But eventually the spirit, whose nature is freedom, and finally complete freedom from any kind of impression, from anything other, because ultimately there is nothing other than spirit. Eventually the spirit will free itself from its self-enforced misconceptions. I mean, if there is illusion, it is a self-generated illusion. There's nothing else that's really forcing the universal logos into a condition of emanative illusion. The more it willingly self-divides, the more it extends itself into points of tension of lesser scope, the more it lives within illusion. And all the manyness of illusion. Well, one wakes up to that. And like the prodigal son, you know, says, I will return to my father's house. Because even there, the servants have more than I do in my banishment to the outer fringes of objectivity. And the great return begins. You know, I leave my father's home and turning back, I leave my father's home. This is a Pisces Virgo kind of statement, but especially Pisces. And then turning back as the prodigal son, I save the Herculean myth of the red cattle of Geryon or Geryon, however it's pronounced, meaning the human beings who are still under the sway of desire, that's the saving. That indicates the kind of saving that the one who turns back initiates. And he certainly overcomes the kind of triple attack of the three-headed monster. You know, we're always meeting those three-headed monsters, meaning the personality mobilized against oneself as one attempts to return to a higher state of being. I guess we could examine the point of tension at which we now live. And is it a point of tension which is, more intense, more concentrated, more deflective of unreality than earlier points of tension? Or, you know, honestly speaking, have we sunk into lesser points of tension? Some people do, you know, they seem to lose ground in a particular incarnation. It's an unhappy fate, and it's usually brought about by some moral failing which they do not arrest in time, and then which takes them over. It is such a narrow, razor-edged path we're attempting to tread, and if we lose our balance upon it, we can fall into danger, great danger. I'm reminded of it was a film about some very heavy martial arts fighting in the East, and if you were thrown out of the ring for any reason, the ring was surrounded by spears and knives, and you would lose your life on those. You would be skewered because you did not remain within the area of ongoing contention. So it was a life and death process to these martial artists in a tradition that's different from our own, with these MMA fighting, mixed martial arts. They are a little bit tame compared to the consequences that were found in the East. So we are present, struggling within the arena, and we cannot leave the arena until victory is ours. We are the struggling human being, and the struggle is with illusion, with glamour, with the chaos of Maya, with all that veils what we really are internally within the kingdom of heaven. And we don't mean here a fatuous kind of heaven that is suggested by so many of the wishful, thinking, concrete-minded systems, you know, which is a kind of a heaven filled with spiritual materialism. We don't mean that at all. There are all these different heavens. And as DK talked about it, you know, Paul talked about being drawn up into the third heaven, which obviously, at least to me, represents the higher mental plane, the third heaven as it reflects the seventh heaven, the seventh, which represents the logoic plane. And says DK was a statement completely beyond the comprehension of those who took it down. and then later dropped some of it. That is the way of concentration, you know, or the way of reporting on these deeply spiritual matters, let's say. The little vessel can only hold what it can hold. And a more capacious vessel could hold more of the truth, but the truth comes to us and we collect it in our little vessel, and much never makes it into the vessel, and then we pass on what we have. And people are deprived of the original meaning. So, letter 8, page 253, and as I say, I'm probably going to keep this short. It's been a long time since I've been able to come back to this work. Even though I'm really eager to do it. But there have just been so many in the world demands that it has not been possible. Or maybe it's been possible, or maybe I just haven't asserted myself enough, but there's always a question of one's reach exceeding one's grasp. As the poet Browning told us, that a man's reach should exceed his grasp, or what's a heaven for? And that is, I'm sure, true for all of us. So I'll see whether I can go on. I would love to be able to do it. Basically, I would love to be able to make some helpful connective commentary. I wonder if I can call it that, you know. Making connective commentaries. Any one of us could read the Tibetan books and say certain things about them that come to our mind. And the question is, do they link sufficiently with other points of information as to bring a picture of pure reason into the consciousness? That is really the goal of all of these commentaries, to bring us into a situation where pure reason, whether of the abstract mind or still deeper of the intuition, becomes a fact in our consciousness. It's not enough to simply collect items of information. It reminds one of what Master Moria said, that even a donkey can carry a library on his back. So just collecting information bears much karmic responsibility and not necessarily much benefit to the collector. But when you can create those passageways of light between items of information, then somehow you're weaving it all together. And there are many, many paths between the different items of information, and yet a wholeness is perceived. And that is the goal of this kind of work, so that the deep principles of occult wisdom settle into the consciousness and form a foundation for how we view the world, naturally offering us ever deeper understanding because of that foundation. Now, I think more of us need to be scrupulous about establishing the foundation, because a new installment of the teaching is on its way, he says, around the year 2025. Maybe it will be the year 2025, maybe a bit before, maybe a bit after. And how will we really recognize it? But we need always a very solid foundation to apprehend what is next imparted. Now, wouldn't you agree that if we understood in some depth the secret doctrine, maybe Isis Unveiled and, you know, some of Blavatsky's works, that we would be in a better position to apprehend what the Tibetan imparted through Alice Bailey? And of course, there were theosophists, a bit maybe of the rebellious kind, you know, or the kind of theosophists that refused to be trammeled by dogma, who had exactly that foundation and in the early days could make the segue from the secret doctrine and so forth into cosmic fire, the psychological key to the secret doctrine. And if we are really well grounded in the Alice Bailey work, which I'm trying to facilitate, always thinking that our stability could be more and better, then we will be ready for the expression of the third installment, which I think relatively will contain many wonders, many points of explanation that have eluded us so far as we work within the Bailey teaching. Maybe intuition has revealed a number of these missing points, but it's often very good when DK spells out his opinion, his assessment, his point of view with regard to uncertainties that we may have experienced when we are reading his works. There are so many, you know, so much given. I just don't see how it would, some of what is given would be meaningful to arhats and masters, initiates of very high degree. This information on the lords of karma and the four maharajas and the Lipika lords and their origin and their geometry and the information on the cosmic paths and so forth. You know, the very high initiates could study that kind of material just the way they do study letters on occult meditation, or rather, excuse me, The Light of the Soul, the third and fourth book of The Light of the Soul. And probably there is material here in this book that they could also study. So we simply, gradually, persistently slog on, keep on keeping on, as they say, with the material that we have been given and make it a part of ourselves. I'm remembering that Master DK talked to one of his rather more advanced students who was an assistant, close assistant to Alice Bailey and the editor of many of the books, and he said to her, to RSU it was, within your causal body are stored so many of the words, so much of the information of the books you have read. Interesting, isn't it, that all those things are stored in the causal body, but then the permanent atoms are in the causal body itself. So they can be stored both in the permanent atoms and be within the causal body, the lower part of it. He says, but why don't you do something with it? You have all of this information. You've read many, many books. Now try to come forward with some working up of the material that you have collected so you can demonstrate that it's truly assimilated and so it can be useful to other people. Just collecting is not enough. Just always filling is not enough. We have to do something with it, and we have to, when we try to explain it to others, we are already working upon it, applying our mentality to it, and thereby assimilating it. Okay, well, you know, I've been going on a bit. The next is about who are the masters, and I'm, you know, going to reserve that for another program. I'm just eager to send something to you because it's been too long for those who are, you know, following the process anyway. And that's where we will begin next time in letter 8. This is still letter 8. And we will work at this very interesting material. I do have the memory that when I read this book long ago, I did find it difficult. I found it, you know, not at all an especially beginning book. And maybe I will be reminded of that assessment as I go along. Okay, we'll get this out to you as soon as possible. And thank you for being present. Well, thank you for being. How can you help but be? I mean, you're going to be no matter what. But thank you for studying on and preparing this foundation through your assimilation of what Master DK has so generously given. So lots of love, many blessings from all of us on the communications group, or on the communications team, and we'll work on further. Bye-bye.